The aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. The aftermath of nonviolence is redemption. The aftermath of nonviolence is reconciliation. The aftermath of violence, however, is bitterness. And this is the thing I'm concerned about. Let us fight passionately and unrelentingly for the goal of justice and freedom. But let's be sure that our hands are clean in the struggle. Let us never fight with falsehood and violence and hate and malice, but always fight with love, so that when the day comes that the walls of segregation have completely crumbled in Montgomery, that we will be able to live with people as our brothers and sisters.
Good morning. Very excited to be here today with my guest, Massimo Mazzucco. My name is John Shack. Every second Friday, we bring you the beloved community, looking at resources for activism and social justice and spirituality and truth and goodness. And you can find information about the show and about me on my website, progressivespirit.net. I actually have a new website coming out. It's up, not a lot on it, but it's growing. It's simple, johnshuck.com, johnshuck.com. You can go there and find all my previous radio shows, Progressive Spirit and so forth there, as well as all of my other heresies. Got a heresy today. This is the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11. The nagging question remains, did it really happen? Were the images seen by hundreds of millions, a half billion, on live television actually from the moon or from a NASA simulator? Italian filmmaker Massimo Mazzucco has one of the most comprehensive films yet about the moon landings, and he explores all sides of the controversy. His 2017 film, American Moon, looks at the best evidence both for and against the moon landings. Plus, the film analyzes for the first time ever the Apollo pictures in detail with commentary from some of the top photographers in the world. You decide. Was the Apollo project, quote, the biggest achievement in the history of mankind, or the biggest fakery of all times? The film is available on Vimeo. You can rent or buy it. Search Vimeo, Moon, American Moon, and you can find it there. You can also watch the trailer on the website, on the kboo.fm /beloved community website. I have a link to that, and I will have a link to it on Progressive Spirit and Facebook and on all of that. So you can watch the trailer, catch the film on Vimeo. I speak live with Massimo Mazzucco today from Italy about his film. In addition to American Moon, Massimo Mazzucco has produced the following films, others besides even these, The New American Century in 2007, which was a view of America's historical, philosophical, economic, and political background. In 2008, The Other Dallas, a documentary on Robert F. Kennedy's assassination, also broadcast by Italian TV, that claims that the man convicted for the crime, Sirhan Sirhan, could not have physically killed the U.S. senator. The Lords of the World in 2009 was another film by Massimo Mazzucco. The UFO history and the military persistent interference, both American and Russian, in what seems to be a much larger issue than one would normally believe. He also produced the film Cancer, The Forbidden Cures in 2010, all the successful cures against cancer discovered in the last 100 years, and claims that they were suppressed. And The True History of Marijuana. He came up with this one, produced this one in 2011. The True History of Marijuana digs deep into expose a worldwide conspiracy led by the petrochemical industry that has outlawed one of the most useful plants known to mankind. And then the film that really opened my eyes up to a lot of things came out in 2013, Massimo Mazzucco's September 11, The New Pearl Harbor, a 5-hour documentary that refutes the commonly accepted account of 9/11 and shows the resulting analysis by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, to be deeply and fundamentally flawed. That's the filmmaker I have on today. He is Massimo Mazzucco. We're trying to get him on the phone from Italy. And while we do that, we're just going to take a little break and play this sung by the B-52s, and we'll get them connected here, which will inspire us for today's show. Joys of Community Radio. We got a hold of Massimo Mazzucco from Italy. Fantastic. Massimo, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello, John. How are you?
Wonderful. So glad to have you here. I already did the introduction for you, telling you about folks about the film here, American Moon, as well as some of your previous films, New American Century, The Other Dallas, The Lords of the World, Cancer, The Forbidden Cures, The True History of Marijuana, September 11, the New Pearl Harbor, and of course, the film we want to talk about today, American Moon. How did you decide to make a film about the Apollo project?
Oh, it's a very, very interesting story, because normally I am, you know, I'm inclined to look at conspiracies, historical conspiracies, from a conspiracy point of view.
Uh-huh.
In this case, it came from a professional point of view. In that, in the early part of my life, I'm 65 now, when I was between 20 and 40, I was a professional photographer, fashion photographer. I was actually working all over the world, including the States. I was working for magazines such as Mademoiselle, 17, Glamour. So I was, you know, pretty good, I would say.
Uh-huh.
And I knew my trade pretty well. And one day I bumped into, around the year 2000, when NASA put online all the Apollo pictures in high definition. I bumped into those pictures and I looked at them with a professional eye. And what the professional eye was absolutely shocking, because I realized that those pictures had exactly the same shortcomings that my pictures had when I tried to replicate the sunlight in the studio. As a professional photographer, sooner or later in your life, you'll try to replicate the sunlight in the studio, because you just don't want to go on trips everywhere and having to wait for the clouds to go away. So you just sit there on a beach waiting for the sun to go away, and you think, could I do this at home in my studio on my own watch? And you try, and you can, but 90%, meaning there's always going to be a problem. And when I looked at those pictures, I saw exactly the same problems I had in my own studio when I tried to replicate the sunlight. So it started with a professional eye. And then the first thing I did was, is it me, the conspiracy theorist in me, that sees problems where there aren't? So I called up the famous photographer I used to work for, and the one who taught me the trade. His name is Oliviero Toscani. He's known in America probably before the Benetton campaigns and many others. Anyway, he still is a very, very top photographer. So I called him up and says, Oliviero, what did you think when you saw the Apollo pictures for the first time? And he said, and I quote him literally, he said, had they asked me to do them, I would have done a much better job. So then that's when I knew it wasn't me. It was really a problem. So the idea was, okay, how do I prove this? If I say that these pictures are taken in the studio, nobody's going to believe me, because I am the quote-unquote conspiracy theorist. So let's go and interview some of the most famous photographers in the world which took me a while to hook up with, but I eventually did, and just present them with the pictures and ask them what they think. And they all came up with the same exact objections that I had as a professional, meaning the light is artificial, basically. I'm simplifying now very much.
But that was the big part, wasn't it? It was the replicating the sunlight, which was it's hard to do now, let alone in 1969.
You cannot replicate the light of the sun because the sun is such a huge source of light compared to the Earth that its rays travel parallel to us. And you know, no matter how large your source, your artificial source is in the studio, it will always be the light rays will always be diverging because it's going to be a spotlight. You can make it strong, but it's still going to be a spotlight. The rays come out of the source and they diverge in an angle. And the impossible thing to replicate is exactly the parallel rays that come from the sun. A trained eye will see that immediately. Obviously, a layman, you know, the normal person who's not a photographer will not see the difference. But for us in our business, this is a huge red flag.
And so that was a consensus then among the photographers that you interviewed. You spent over an hour in that movie looking at a lot of the photographs. It really was a consensus that was the real problem with the video footage that we have inherited from NASA.
The consensus is mostly on the pictures, not on the video footage.
Okay.
The video footage has other problems, different problems, which I found later. But, you know, just to complete the answer to your first question, I started with the photography part, and then I went on to look at also all the other problems, which other researchers had already pointed out in many cases. You know, the problem in going through the Van Allen belts, the problem with radiation in general, the problem with the suspension cables, the steel cables that they might have used in case they were in a studio and you could actually see them in some cases. So I found all the evidence and I put them together. The film is basically two main blocks, actually three main blocks. One block is the reasons in favor of the moon landing. So I also introduced the opposition, so to speak. I let them, the so-called debunkers, speak their piece and try to explain why they believe that we went to the moon. So if you get the film, you get both sides of the fence, so to speak. Then I analyze all the technical problems that had to do with the mission, and the third part is the one you mentioned about the photography. I think the one about the photography, it's really the one that puts a nail in the coffin of this issue, because once you have some of these photographers who are not at all conspiracy theorists, they're just photographers. I asked them specifically, I will not ask you whether you think we went to the moon or not. I will simply present you with pictures and you'll tell me about the light, the angle, the reflectors, the this and this and that technically. And these are all photographers, by the way, who used to already work in the 70s. So they know exactly the cameras that were used by the photographers, by the professionals in the 70s and the kind of film. So we know exactly what we're talking about. I was an assistant then. I also knew about that. The same film that Apollo used, I was loading it every single day, 100 times a day for photographers when I was an assistant. So I know exactly what that kind of film can do and cannot do. And when you see those results, they're pretty near to a miracle. And you just have to conclude that, no, that there are artificial lights. There are additional reflecting panels. You could not have taken those pictures with a single source of light being the sun on the moon. That is the main technical conclusion.
Massimo Mazzucco is my guest. He's live with me on the Beloved Community from Italy. You know, there's another aspect to it, in terms of the technical aspect of photography, the whole idea of filmmaking itself. I think that gave you an eye to this as well. For example, the film begins with clips from a 1902 film about a trip to the moon, images paralleling the Apollo 11, taking off, landing on the moon, stepping out into the moon, seeing Earth from the moon, leaving the moon, landing in the ocean. It appears that the moon landing was a script from long before, somewhat imprinted on us. As I watched that, and as well as even their September 11th film, the water is muddy between what we might say Hollywood and what we might say news filming. Can you comment a little bit about that?
Well, the filming part is also very tricky. They had both television cameras on the moon, and, of course, we all watched what was supposed to be a live first walk on the moon by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. And they had also film cameras on the moon, 16 millimeters. Those are much higher quality than the television pictures. The problem with television pictures is that in many, many instances, see, the camera they were using was mounted on the rover for the last three missions. On the rover was the little Jeep that was going around. This rover had very, very soft suspension system. And the umbrella transmitting to Earth, directly to the Earth, was mounted on the same rover where the camera was mounted. And sometimes you have the astronauts, during a live transmission, shaking the rover, sitting on it, and making it bounce up and down. And you can see the frame from the camera going up and down 10, 15, 20, 25 degrees, which means the umbrella that's transmitting also is undulating just as well. And yet, the connection doesn't break. I mean, this is a miracle. If you watch, a biking race, for example, the little satellite connections that you get today and with today's technology, sometimes disconnect because the motorcycle is moving from where you're transmitting, and all you need is a little shake and you lose the connection. This never happens from the moon. I mean, we're talking about 250,000 miles away where a 2-degree angle of mistake will make you miss the Earth completely. And here you have the umbrella transmitting, bouncing by 15, 20 degrees in angle, and you don't lose the connection. So that's another big problem that I pointed out in the film.
Now, landing a person on the moon was an ambitious project from the start. Kennedy announced it in 1961. So talk about why NASA would go to the trouble of faking all of this, if that's indeed the case.
Okay. Absolutely. This is really important to understand because there's a misconception. And that is that the so-called moon hoax theory is somehow 180 degrees opposite to the official story. In other words, in the official story, they did everything right, including some problems, but they got there. In the so-called moon hoax theory, they just, from the beginning, they knew they were going to fool the world. This is not at all my theory. Both storylines proceed parallel at least until 1968. In other words, my opinion is that they did definitely try to go. They made every possible effort. Only when they got to 1960, after 67, when they had the big fire of Apollo 1 and everything was stopped, the entire program was stopped for over a year, that's probably when they realized they could not make it in time by the end of the decade. And at that point, they already had all the simulation systems that will allow you, and this is, they tell you in their own documentaries, NASA tells you, we can simulate an entire lunar mission from takeoff to return to Earth without ever moving from the studio. Okay? Hmm. So my theory is that at that point, when they realized that they could not go, they already had the simulation systems in place. They look exactly the same. I mean, I must say, you know, they look very, very similar. And somebody must have said, you know what, guys? We cannot afford to tell the world we're not going to make it because we're going to look pretty bad. Let's just use the simulators, which will produce similar image to what we expect to get. And since you don't really have the comparison with what is real and what is not, those images became the reality of the moon.
Now, immediately the next question comes to mind is, well, how could they possibly pull something like that off with so many people working on this project all over the place? Wouldn't they have known? How could they fool engineers, for example?
Yes. This is a very legitimate objection to the moon hoax theory, and I addressed it in depth in the film because it's a legitimate objection. I mean, somebody should say, you know, how could you do that with 400,000 people working on the project altogether? You cannot just, you know, I think that the answer is that you don't really need 99.9% of these people to know that you're not going. If the images that are fed to the main screen at Houston, at Mission Control, are coming from a satellite instead of coming directly from the moon, the first people to be deceived would be actually those people who are sitting in the mission control in Houston who think they're watching a real thing. In other words, my opinion is that it only takes maybe 20, 30, 50 people altogether to be in the know of the hoax, but all the rest will be your first victims. Like, for example, you know, I have a parallel. We have the big Volkswagen scandal a couple of years ago. And it turns out that Volkswagen had fooled the entire world with faking the emission system from their cars. Now, 600,000 people work at Volkswagen. But that does not mean that all 600,000 people had to know about that. Only a few needed to know. And the rest who mount the engines and who put the pieces together and who put them on the market, they actually convinced that they're putting out a legitimate piece of work. So the real question is, where did the images that we saw as live actually come from? Because if you suppose that those pictures came from a recorded set, recorded studio, then anybody who was watching them would have been fooled, including the people at NASA.
But now, it wasn't just Apollo 11, right? The other, what about the other moon landings? Were they also?
Well, in my opinion, judging from the pictures, okay, for those who are not so much in the know, there were six missions to the moon,
uh-huh.
Apollo 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17. That means six times two, 12 astronauts altogether allegedly walked on the moon. 12 men are actually moonwalkers.
Right.
The third man of each mission was rotating around the moon and stayed there and waited for them to come back. Judging from the photographic problems, my conclusion is that all the missions were faked. And that's because you can see the same exact photographic problems in all the missions. Now, somebody has suggested, and this is also a legitimate suggestion, I would say. They say, well, you know, maybe they did go to the moon, but the pictures turn out bad for some reason. So in order not to look too bad, they reshot them in the studio. So the theory is, well, maybe the pictures are fake, but the moon landings were real. Okay?
Okay.
There is a counter argument to that. It's a little complicated to explain now, but the answer is no. It's impossible because the live pictures we saw on television on July 20, 1969, and the pictures taken allegedly on the moon are from the same set. You can see that there are exactly the same details from the pictures and the video images, which means the set is the same, which means those images, video, and pictures were taken in the same place at the same time. And since the broadcast was live on July 20, 1969. That means that also the pictures had to be taken either on July 20, if the trips were real, or before, but not after that, because they match perfectly, detail by detail. So you could not have broadcast those pictures live and then reenact in a studio with such a perfection in the detail, everything that transpired through the videos.
My guest, if you're just joining us on The Beloved Community, is Massimo Mazzucco. He is a filmmaker, a journalist, and his film that we're discussing today is American Moon, that came out in 2017. You can pick it up for rent or buy on Vimeo. The debunkers, you include a number of them, including a fellow Italian, and including the American television show Mythbusters. What's the best evidence or argument in favor of the official account that the Apollo 11 did go to the moon?
Well, honestly, you should ask them this, really. But I can tell you from, and it's not up to me to say what the best argument in favor is, but I tell you that all the best arguments they bring up are easily debunked. So you have a case of debunkers being debunked in this case, because, for example, they have the retroreflector hypothesis. They say if you beam up a laser beam to the moon, it comes back because there's a retroreflector there. So that means that we really went. This is one proof, according to them. I have a whole chapters on their proof anyway. But the answer to that is you could actually bounce a laser beam off the moon and back to Earth and detect it on Earth even without one of those retroreflectors, even 4 years before it was the moon landing. So that does not account as a proof. Another proof that they say is the moon rocks. Well, I tell you, it's a long analysis that needs to be made, but no one can actually prove that those, the bottom line is no one can actually prove that those rocks came from the moon.
Some of them, in fact, in the film you talk about some of them coming actually on an expedition from a meteorite, right? Antarctica.
Well, one thing we know is that they found meteorites from the moon in Antarctica. And strangely enough, in 1967, 1 year before the first mission to the moon, Wernher von Braun had nothing better to do during his holidays to take a trip to Antarctica. There's pictures of him and the NASA people in Antarctica. So I wonder what they were doing. Maybe they were looking at penguins. I don't know. Either that or collecting rocks that could later use for tell us that they were. Anyway, the bottom line is there is really no single proof that we went to the moon. Another proof that's brought up very frequently is that we have images which were taken recently from the probes that were sent around the moon in 08, 09, 2008, 2009. The Clementine was one. The other one was called the Orbiter. I don't remember exactly the name. Lunar Orbiter. They all took pictures of the alleged landing sites. And you can actually see in those pictures what is supposed to be the leftover from the LEM and leftover from the Jeep and the foot tracks and the rover tracks. And you can see that in those pictures. The problem is, there are pictures. I mean, my own kid, my own son, I give him Photoshop, and he can give it today. He can produce those pictures in 20 minutes. So for NASA being criticized for having, being accused of having faked like 6,000 pictures back in the 70s, 50 years ago, you can't come up now with a picture and say this is proof that we landed, because, I mean, those pictures today can be produced in 5 minutes. And in the digital era, a picture can never be a proof of anything anymore. Back in the 70s, the pictures could not be produced in digital. You had to go into the darkroom. I actually spent months and months of my life in a darkroom learning all the tricks. And by the way, many of those tricks I found in the prints from the moon. So I knew exactly. I said, I see what they did here. I see what they did there. Look here, the shadow is actually added on. This is not real. This was pasted on later. But it was very difficult to do that. So they actually did a very good job for that era. Today with Photoshop, any kid can do better.
Massimo Mazzucco, my guest, he's with me live from Italy, talking about his film American Moon. Let's talk for a little bit about the Van Allen belts. Interesting interviews in your film with modern astronauts, contemporary, who were speaking about the Van Allen belts as a real problem today, as if people hadn't crossed them before. These are radiation belts in between 1,000 and 25,000 miles beyond Earth, between the Earth and the Moon. Tell us a little bit about the significance of those. Are you with me? Hopefully he will call us back. Massimo Mazzucco, his film is called American Moon, in which he analyzes both pro and con, the various arguments regarding the official story of whether or not astronauts really did go to the moon. And the question I'm going to ask him if we get him back again is the astronauts themselves. After watching that film, I thought, if this really happened, my goodness, these astronauts who landed on the moon are American heroes. They're icons. If it's true that the moon landing was a hoax and that these astronauts participated in this hoax, that might be the hardest thing in some respects to accept. To accept the fact that these astronauts, who are the icons and the heroes, suddenly participating in something that wasn't real at all, kind of deflates your balloon. Well, let's go to Donald in Oregon City. Hi, Donald. Are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Well, what do you think about American Moon?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to talk about the movie, but, you know, the fact is we've been exploring for, you know, hundreds of years already. And the truth is, if it was safe there to go, I mean, we would have people there living and taking advantage of the extra space. Is it a safety reason why we're not there? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was one of the questions that we got cut off when I was talking with him, was about the Van Allen belts, these radiation belts in between. And so I believe we have him back. Donald, stay with us on there. Are you with us here, Massimo?
I am, and I apologize. I lost the internet connection for a moment here.
All right, well,
Italy's not exactly...
Glad to have you back.
Exactly the most technological country in the world, you know.
Glad to have you back. Also on the phone with me is Donald from Oregon City. And Donald asked a question about if it was safe. Donald, ask your question again.
Yes, the truth is there is a safety reason probably why we're not there. And, you know, Americans have always been explorers. And if it was easy to just go over there and live, I mean, you know, we would have, you know, developed ways to live there on a regular basis because, you know, it seems as though, like, they put a stop on it and, you know, we can't go over there and explore or do anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
it's an open market there. Unless maybe the Chinese are going to do it before the Americans. I don't know.
All right, Donald, thanks for the call. Any response, Massimo?
Yes, of course. First of all, I wouldn't worry too much about the Chinese. I think today they will have the same problems that everybody has going there. And your caller raised a very interesting point. If it was so easy going back and forth back in the 60s, why haven't you would expect to have built bases by now, to have built an actual permanent base from which you could launch to other planets like Mars, for example. Instead, we never went back. The official reason was, well, there's nothing out there really. Well, but then you didn't need six missions to go out there to find out that there's nothing. One mission would have been enough. The problem is that the money had already been allocated for the six missions, and so they went. But again, this is a very good point. By now, you would with the growth, exponential growth of progress, technological progress, you would expect now to have a city up there, minimum, with connections, with water, with air, with everything, and shuttles going back and forth like, you know, like it's the simplest thing in the world. And we have to, it seems like we have to start all over again from zero. Now we're talking about with an unmanned mission in 3 or 4 years. This mission has been pushed back, by the way, already 3 or 4 times. So one wonders, what kind of problems do we have now that we didn't have back in the 60s?
Well, you know, that comes up. And that the question I had asked you just before we got cut off was about the Van Allen belts. And you had in some interesting interviews with modern astronauts who speak about the Van Allen belts as a real problem today, even as if people had not crossed them before. One of the astronauts didn't even know who supposedly had gone to the moon. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is to the credit of Bart Sibrel, a filmmaker who made this incredible, incredible, incredible documentary called Astronauts Gone Wild. He basically chased down all the astronauts from the Apollo missions, I think from Apollo 10 on, and ambushed them in a way. So it was not a very nice way to do journalism, but it's very effective. And to each of them, he basically, sometimes he got interviews, sometimes he ambushed them in a supermarket. And he said, if you have been to the moon, would you swear on the Bible, on this Bible, which he was holding, that you went to the moon? And almost none of them did. Only two, I think, out of 12 or 14 astronauts swear on the Bible. But most of them run away. Like you know, they've seen the devil. Neil Armstrong was even offered $5,000 cash to give away for good opus. But he didn't. He didn't want to sign. Now, in regards to one of the interviews is Alan Bean, astronaut from Apollo 12. And Sibrel asks him, did you have any troubles going through the belts? And he candidly answers, because he believes he's being filmed in a pro-moon interview. He candidly answers, he says, I don't think we went up far enough to even reach the Van Allen belts. So what is basically that this slip of tongue tells us is that most likely the astronauts were put in Earth orbit for 7 days, where they simply waited for their, you know, grow their beard a little bit and come back 7 days later and look all scruffy and ruffy, and then they went to the moon. About the Van Allen belts in general, as I was saying before I got cut off, it is one argument that in itself cannot prove or disprove that we went to the moon, because, you know, you would have to go through them personally to test what it's like. But one fact is, which you mentioned, there is this astronaut from NASA today who says, literally in one of the NASA videos, says we have to figure out shields and protections before we can send people through this region of space. This is his actual words. And you go, excuse me, what did you use 50 years ago that you don't have now? So it seems like in the history of the Van Allen belts, when they were discovered by Van Allen, he said he called them deadly. and they remained deadly in the scientific literature up until the time we needed to go to the moon. In those years we went to the moon, suddenly they were no longer deadly. They were like, you know, the equivalent of just an X-ray, NASA would tell you. But then again, after the moon missions are over, now they're dangerous again, and we need to figure out protections before we can send people through that region of space. So this sounds very much like, you know, anybody would say, excuse me, just use whatever you used 50 years ago and go again. But apparently that technology is no longer available.
Massimo Mazzucco is speaking with me live from Italy. He's a filmmaker, a journalist. American Moon is the film. We're talking about the moon landings as we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11 in July 1969. And that brings up the question, really, of the astronauts. After really watching your film and absorbing it and thinking to myself, my gosh, the hardest thing to accept is the astronauts themselves, American heroes, icons. And if it's true that this was, that they just like flew around Earth a few times and then came back, it was a hoax that they participated in. They weren't just fooled like the others. They were actually part of the fooling. And that might be the hardest thing to accept.
Well, it must have been hard for them, I would accept.
Yeah, I bet they must have had a lot of pressure.
As you say, I mean, they must have found themselves in a situation where they had no choice. I mean, when you get to that point in the history, and you are nearing 1968, and everybody's talking about going to the moon, and the entire world is waiting for this to happen, and you just find out that actually we're going to have to fake it, you can't just say, oh, no, I'm going to go to the papers and tell the truth, because they must have given you some very, very, very good reasons to not to spill the beans. And of course, they must have lived with this problem all their life. In fact, their history after the moon missions has been very, very interesting in itself. I don't want to go through each astronaut's history right now, but for example, Neil Armstrong, the most famous one,
yeah,
he became completely shunned the world, completely retired, and he became a professor again. I mean, you're the first man who went to the moon. I mean, take a victory lap of two, you know, or two before you retire. They just did this. Yeah, they did a trip around the world for publicity. But then he basically disappeared. He gave almost no more interviews, maybe two or three in his whole life. And I don't buy the fact that he's just a shy person. There must be something more to it, you know. And you can tell from the press conference that they had 6 weeks after their return from the moon. If you just study their body language, these are not three people who came back from the biggest achievement in the history of mankind. These are three people who are suffering, deeply hurting inside for having to put up with this hoax that they were told they had to. They had no choice, but obviously this goes against everything they believe in. So I actually feel very, very sorry for them.
Joe from Vancouver has a question. Joe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm just curious as to why you are giving this any airtime. This guy.
All right, Joe. Some people, I guess, don't like what you do. So, yeah, what has been the reaction from the media, others, to your film?
Can I answer this person anyway?
You sure can.
Because
but he's gone, but you can answer him anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's okay. I mean, I'm sure he interprets the sentiment of many people.
Uh-huh.
Sir, you must understand one thing. I was born on July 20, 1954. So on the night of the moon landing, I was turning 15. Not only that, but on that evening, I kissed a girl for the first time. So for me, that date has always been a fantastic memory in my youth. The best achievement of mankind connected with the best achievement I ever had in my own personal life so far. So imagine for me what it meant when I saw those pictures and I realized that they were taken on Earth and they were all fake. I'm not particularly happy to have to admit that we were fooled, but facts are facts. And if you stand by facts, facts have strongest impact on me than anything else. So maybe this is the difference between me and you, sir. You prefer to stay with your own belief, which is perfectly legitimate. I try to adapt my belief to the facts that I can verify.
And they are very difficult because there's many forces, obviously, that don't want this news out. In fact, you talked in the film about NASA itself, when private companies wanted to land unmanned craft, that they put a no-fly zone around where the landings were.
Yeah, this is a curious fact that happened about 10 years ago, in 2011, I think, when started the Google X Prize, which was a prize of, I think, $30 million for any private enterprise who would land a rover on the moon and have it transmit live pictures from the moon. One of the plans was to go to visit the moon landing sites. You know, I think it was an American company called Astrobotics Technology who planned to go to visit with the rover the moon landing site of Apollo 11. And NASA came out with a basically forbid them from getting even near to those landing sites. The excuse was that they want to preserve the historic landing site. But, I mean, all there is there to preserve is some footprints. And I'm sure that the rover will not have ruined all the footprints there. So they must have had another reason for not to want these rovers to even get near the landing sites.
One of the things that you brought, actually, when we started our interview, you talked about how NASA put all of this footage on its website. It's almost, that was interesting. Why do you suppose they did that? Did they feel that they had to do that?
I think that NASA, NASA is not one person.
Right.
NASA is a huge, huge organization, and one hand usually doesn't know what the other one does. And in particular with the moon landings, if they were faked, as I assume they were, very, very few people were in the know. So even then, you must have had 99% of NASA people convinced that the trips were real. So imagine today, 50 years later, who's going to tell a particular person who puts out all the pictures of NASA online, oh, be careful because, you know, there might be a mazuku out there who can spot the wrong direction of the shadows or this or that. It's not conceivable that this would happen. The people who put them out there probably convinced that they were real. So had they known for sure that those pictures were faked, they would have disappeared a long time ago. But they're there and they're available and they're ready to defend them even now. And also, there's one thing to be said. I mean, the media power that the NASA has and official versions have in general is so overwhelming compared to the power any Massimo Mazzucco has that they don't really care. I mean, they can let any Mazzucco live and say his own thing, and they can always – it's never going to get on CNN, so to speak, or ABC or NBC. Right. And so they don't really have a problem. They say, we know there's conspiracy theorists out there. We can counter them at any time, so let them live. Probably this is their position.
I would say your film, move to another film that you made, if you don't mind here. That is September 11th, the new Pearl Harbor. Thinking about, you know, when anybody looks at Building 7, just a collapsing in free fall acceleration there for 2.5 seconds. Despite that, it doesn't matter. The power, as you mentioned, of the media to overwhelm any dissent is incredible.
Yeah, and they use they make fun of you, which is a very effective technique. This technique was actually made up in the 50s in the when they had the Robertson panel about the UFOs, when there was a big UFO visitations in the 50s, 1952, I think it was in Washington, and all that. They made this Robertson panel, which was tasked of how do we face this problem with hiding the truth. And one of the suggestions was ridicule, use ridicule as the main weapon to debunk anybody who comes up with UFOs strange theories. And that idea of using ridicule as a weapon has worked fantastically, I have to say, throughout the years, and is still very effective today. If I bring up 9/11, for example, at a regular place, regular dinner with people that don't expect it, somebody will certainly come up to me, oh, you're one of those conspiracy theorists who thinks that Americans blew out the towers themselves, right? And there already goes the dynamics of making fun of you. It's very, very effective.
You use the term conspiracy theorist yourself. how do you?
Well,
yeah,
it is. I think that more than conspiracy theories, these are conspiracy facts. The problem is how you, do you want to look at them or not? For example, the caller who called before will never look at my film. He has already decided that, yes, we went to the moon, and please don't, you know, don't bother me with these stupid things, which is entirely his prerogative to do that, of course. But there's, for example, one person who will not be able to change his mind, even put at stake the belief that he has. And humanity, unfortunately, or fortunately, if you look at it from the other side, has this capacity of holding on to whatever you believe, because if the opposite makes you feel unsafe, that we have this dynamics called denial, which is actually a very, very helpful system that we have. It's a protection system that we all have. We only look at things that we can potentially accept. And if you cannot accept a certain conclusion, you might as well reject it up front, so it's easier. So it every human being goes through their personal process, their personal path. And I don't blame anybody for not looking at the evidence, because I understand this is they in their own deep subconscious, they cannot afford to possibly find out, oh my God, you know, I was fooled. Like Mark Twain said once, it's much easier to fool a million people than to convince them that they have been fooled. And this is absolutely true.
So a philosophical question, we just have a couple of minutes left. What's your perspective on prognosis, on the possibility of being able to uncover great deceptions in terms of the mass majority of people? Is there a movement in which your films are really, and people like you are opening up minds that could happen, or is the opposition so great that it's closing down? What's your perspective on this now?
I think that both things that you said are true. There's a growing number of people who want to face the truth, even though it's painful sometimes. And there's a large majority that still rejects that truth. The consciousness of humanity in general is raising. But within that, the amount of people who do not want, who are much more comfortable with a comfortable lie, is still the large majority. But, you know, in regards to the fact that will it ever come out, will it ever become a public domain, it takes time. For example, now, if you look at the Kennedy assassination, 56 years now from it, and more, even documentaries on History Channel will basically admit that it was a conspiracy. There's almost no documentary today that will tell you it was Oswald alone. But it took 50 years of discussion, of digesting the idea that possibly it was not a lone shooter who killed our president. You know, it takes time for an entire nation to come to that kind of conclusion. So I think for each of these big, big lies, it takes time. And you just, you know, for whoever is ready and they want to find out the truth, the elements are there and they can make up their own, they can make their own decisions. And for those who are not ready, well, there's plenty of time in the future for that. Just one thing that I wanted to tell your audience. You said that the American Moon is available on Vimeo on demand. It is, but all my films are also available on Amazon.com, which in the States is much easier for everybody. In different countries like New Zealand, Australia, they speak English, but they don't get Amazon directly, then Vimeo on demand is a good solution. But for the States, Amazon is probably the best solution.
Well, I have to say, Massimo Mazzucco, that what really was a profound and excellent film. And I advise anyone to take a look at it, whether you agree or disagree, make your own decision. But check out the facts. American Moon is the name of the film. Massimo Mazzucco, my guest, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, John.
This is The Beloved Community. You hear The Beloved Community every second Friday from 9 to 10. You can find my website, progressivespirit.net, or johnshuck.com. Until next time, be well.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore.